Have you ever faced a problem that you look at and you think to yourself, there's just, I don't have enough resources to tackle this problem? I think at some point we always do. For those that have been with me for any period of time, you know, the starting of this church was one of those times. We started a church, we looked at our resources, and we said, there is absolutely no way this is going to work. It is going to fail within at least first 6 months, probably. And yet, here we are, years later, God provided for us. But those initial times were very, very scary. And maybe you felt that too. I think of people who have challenges medically. Just this past week, we got notification of a friend of ours whose husband is now in a coma and is not doing really well. Her name is Joanna. And what's also very sad about that is Joanna's sister, Jill, passed away about 2 years ago. And now her husband is literally on life support. Is seeing some good stuff, but you know, you read her posts and you can see really quickly she does not have a lot of the even the mental resources. Like when you're facing the death of your husband, you just maybe don't feel like you can do anything. Or you just take a look at the poverty in the world. How many children are going to go to bed tonight and not have any food? How many people are going to die today because of wars that are happening? You start looking at just the sheer volume of problems we have, and I don't know about you, but there are many times that I kind of feel useless. And then I just look at what God has given me. God has given me a loud voice and the ability to preach. That's about it. That's all I got. And then I got an amazing wife who does so much other things in ministry, so I'm really glad I'm attached to her. But you just take a look at the number of people in this world that don't know Jesus, and you go, this task is going to be impossible to actually handle. And I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, when you think of just the sheer volume of problems, we don't have the money. We don't have the skill. We don't have the resources to accomplish what God has for us to do. And so this is why today is going to be a wonderful thing to remind us, especially as we get ready for this new year, of how God resources us and what we should actually do. If you feel like you feel useless in the kingdom of God, this is going to be the perfect message for you, because God has some very important things to say. Today is the day that we study the feeding of the 5,000. Now, the feeding of the 5,000 is a really important miracle. And the reason why we know it's important is because it is the only miracle outside of the resurrection of Jesus Christ that all four gospel writers actually record. So it was very interesting as we're driving in, Joshua, we always love to chat about, you know, what the sermon's about and what we're doing. And he's like, do you find it hard to just talk about the same story over and over again? I go, yeah, that's why I have a real hard time with Christmas. Jesus is born. A little bit problems with Good Friday. Jesus died. And then we've got Easter. Jesus is risen from the dead. Like, these are very simple things, but I have done this now for 20 some odd years. And every year, guess what happens? Christmas shows up, there's Good Friday, and there's Easter. And then the probably the story that I have preached upon the most would have to be the story, because all four gospels record this. So this is one where you look at it and you go, there's something really important. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to go more on application for this particular service. And the reason why is a lot of the theological import and what Jesus is doing is going to happen next week. Because if you look at the second half, starting at verse 25, it says Jesus is the bread of life. He actually explains why the miracle took place. What was he trying to say? What was the purpose of having the multiplication of loaves and fishes? And there is a theological thing about how God gives us our daily bread. God feeds us. God helps us, just as he did the fountain of life, the living water. Jesus is the living water. Then he's also talking about food as well. And so this first half, though, is much more, I think, focused on the actual story and what takes place. And I'm going to be focusing on the disciples and their reactions to what happens. So, feeding of the 5,000, here we go. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. So he's getting the following. We're already starting to get a hint that these people are following him, maybe not because he is the Messiah, but because he can do some really cool things. And there's going to be a discussion that Jesus is eventually going to have about signs and wonders and how that points to him and how important it is that our faith and belief is not in signs and wonders, but it's in Jesus Christ and the greatest sign and wonder, which is his resurrection from the dead. The other stuff that he does is great, but it's pointing to something. And so that's why these people are coming, which is a great thing for us. People come to Jesus for a lot of different reasons. I mean, some people come to church because, you know, you got nothing better to do on a Sunday. Some of you come to church because someone made you come to church. Some of you come to church because you just came to church since you were a kid, and that just seems like the right thing to do. Some people come to church because they want to learn more about Jesus. Some people come to church because they want to worship Jesus. We all have these different reasons why we're here, and God is not one that says, well, your reason is terrible, but your reason is good. He welcomes all of us to come where we're at and asking questions and learning and growing, and he's not expecting of us all of us to be at the exact same place. He just wants us all growing. And so all of these people are gathering, and it's a large crowd. You already know the number. How big of a crowd is this? 5,000. As we all know from other times that you've probably heard this, it's 5,000 men. Now, the big question is, are there women and children there? It would seem that that would be an accurate statement. We're not really certain. Was this mainly a men movement, or was there also families there? We're starting to see the same thing happen. It is very fascinating to watch how right now, across America, men, young men, are starting to lead the charge on this resurgence and revival of coming back to God. I can tell you that nothing could make me happier than seeing people coming back to church, especially the youth, and seeing this grow. So there's all these men that are there. Now there's women, there's children. We're going to tackle a little bit of the people that say it really wasn't a miracle. I've got some things to say about that. But all these people are gathering, and they're following him. They've seen all these miraculous signs. And so Jesus needs to teach a little bit. So Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. And again, I'll get into that next week when we get into the teaching of what Jesus talks about with the feeding. But when Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" Again, I am so thankful for the next line, because again, we're perplexed. Jesus asks questions that he already knows the answer to, and he's not asking the question for his own sake. Jesus is not sitting around going, "Wow, this is a lot of people. How are we going to feed all these people?" No, he knows exactly what's going to happen, and John helps us see that, where verse 6, he asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Now, what's also interesting is, who did he ask? Philip. So he, and I don't know if this was just one of those convenient things, like Philip just happens to be standing there. I don't know if Philip's been having a bad day and Philip is struggling with some of his faith. I don't know. Was Peter standing around? No idea. We do know that there was one other disciple that was standing around, and his name was Andrew. So Philip and Andrew are hanging out there with Jesus as he's doing this. He says, "Where are we going to find food to feed these people?" Now, this is also one of the compassion parts of Jesus. These people had come from long distances to hear him teach. He could have just said, "Look, man, why didn't you, like, pack your SpongeBob SquarePants lunch pails up and bring them to the teachings? Why did you all show up and you are completely all utterly unprepared? Like, you should starve. That's never how Jesus operates. He looks at the needs of the people and he says, I want to fulfill these things. I want to help people in a real way. So after he asked the question of Philip, I don't know if Philip just kind of stood there like, I don't know how to answer this question. Because if I asked you, like, we don't even have 5,000 sitting here. If I asked you after preaching for 3 hours and we're now past lunchtime and you're getting hungry, and I look at Bob and I say, Bob, how are we going to find food to eat? Because they've only had like some chocolate waxies and a few. That's not going to be enough, right? Do we have enough resources to feed all of you for lunch? No, we don't. So the disciples are thinking we are not only unprepared, but we're also unqualified. I know for the rest of us, we already know what the miracle is that's going to take place, but did anyone go, hey, Jesus, do you remember when we were in Cana and like we didn't have enough wine and you like provided the wine? Like, wine and maybe a little bit of bread, this kind of be cool, you know? How are you, like, you got the liquids down, how about the solid foods? Can you provide something? I don't know. We also know that Philip is probably a practical guy. He was from that area, and so did he just like know where like the nearest In-N-Out Burger was? Did he know where some of the grocery stores were at to buy stuff? No one says anything, because I think that's how we feel. I mean, God looks at you right now and says, there is an entire world out there that is dying and going to hell. And what do you do? That's a lot. I know I don't have the resources. I certainly don't have the skills. I don't have the time nor the energy for all of that. But Andrew comes forth with a faith-based statement. And this is what's important for us. Andrew is there and he says, hey, I've got a kid here. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. Philip had to respond. Because Philip's practical. Philip answered, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. You can try and calculate that out. I guess it depends upon, are you making six figures or are you making minimum wage? But 8 months of working would not even allow everyone to have a bite to eat. And so, again, Philip feels extremely inadequate. Philip feels useless. I can't do this. And that's exactly where God wants us. He wants us at a point where we look at what we have and we say, it's impossible. There's nothing that we can accomplish to help this situation out. But God doesn't want us to stop there. He wants us to have the realization, but then he wants us to do something else, which is exactly what Andrew does. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? Well, this is interesting. Now again, help me out here because I'm curious what's in your brain. 5 loaves of bread. Give me the size of loaves of bread that you think are the 5. Just like okay, so we got some here, some here, some here. Oh, Robert's got a bigger loaf of bread over there. Okay, right? Okay, yeah. Jim is probably closer to the truth. These 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish are designed for a kid's lunch. Now, I don't know about you. Now, I do agree. Some of you people can, like, eat 5 loaves of bread. Like, yeah, just, I'm carving up here. You can toast them, lather them with butter. That's great. But these are smaller loaves. These are smaller things that are designed for a kid to eat. And also, he does note that they are barley. Now, there's a fun thing that he's doing. I always debate on how deep I go into this. But if you did not know this, a miracle of feeding people has already taken place in the Old Testament. So if you ever want to read it, you really should. It's in 2 Kings chapter 4. And guess what type of grain is used for that particular miracle? It's barley loaves. So this is for poor people. So it's not like this kid is, you know, from Newport Beach and he's got like the fancy bougie bread. He's got like the real super duper small. Okay, and now fish. All right, 2 fish. How big are the fish? All right, yeah, the fishermen are all like, yeah, it's a big, how show me a little bit of the fish. How big? You got some? Sorry, yeah. So yeah, like, yeah, we're looking like, yeah, anchovies, yeah. Like enough to maybe do half a pizza, right? Like, and this sounds disgusting. Now, how many of you, if you are there with Jesus and he's like, here, let's just say there are women and children. Let's split the difference. We won't have a girl for every guy, and we won't have a kid for. Let's just say roughly 10,000. There could be more. There could be less. I don't know. But let's just say 10,000 people. Imagine you are one of the disciples. There are 10,000 people, and they are all starting to get hangry. I don't know about you. That gets really dicey, especially in our household. You had 3 boys. Starting to get hangry, it gets, there's blood is going to be shed soon. And so you are there, you're seeing all of this, and Jesus looks at you and says, how are we going to feed them? The CPAs and the math people are start crunching the numbers, we don't have that much money. That's a lot of money. But how many of you, if you had 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. So 5 pieces of bread, 2 fish. How many of you would have brought that to Jesus? I don't know if we would. I know I wouldn't. I would like to think that I have this incredible, robust faith that I would have put all of these disciples to shame. But let's face it, we're probably like the majority of them, that they're not really that bright. But one of them sees the kid with his food. We don't know if, like, I wish I had some of the mechanics. Like, did he see the kid with his SpongeBob lunch pail and be like, hey, kid, what you got in there? Oh, hey, can I see that? Give that to me. All right, Jesus, I got some food for us. Or was it this kid seemed to be more generous? Like, he's looking around. Tell me, do kids have better faith than adults? Like, right, it always, like, so I do kind of think that maybe the kid's like, he's looking around, he's near Jesus, he hears the discussion, and he's like, psst, hey, I got some food. And would you have then gone, hey, Jesus, we do have something. We have this kid's lunch. I wouldn't, because I would be scared that Jesus would look at that and go, are you kidding me? Really? That's what you're bringing to the table. Look at the need that is out there. And all you're going to bring is that little bit? That's what I'd be scared of. But that's exactly what God wants us to do. Exactly. There is a world out there dying without Jesus. There is poverty, there is suffering, there is hurt all over the world. And I know we look at our stuff and we go, we don't have enough to get to it all. God is not asking us to solve all the problems. If we could solve all the problems, would we need God? No, we wouldn't need him. We'd be like, eh, God, no worries. I got this problem taken care of. Piece of cake. God routinely gives us problems that are unsolvable so that our faith would go back to him and say, God, this is all I've got. And God just wants you to give it with a cheerful, joyful heart, like a kid going, this is gonna help. I've watched as kids, like, give, whether it's to someone in need or volunteering time at places that help those that are more unfortunate. Kids have this faith of saying, all I've got is this, so I'm just going to give it, and God's going to have to do something with it. They're not thinking, they're not calculating the enormity of the problem. I think that's brilliant. Don't calculate the enormity of the problem. Take what you have and bring it to Jesus. It's as simple as it is. If you don't have a lot, that's fine. It doesn't matter. But bring what you have. Don't be sitting in a corner somewhere saying, there are people that have greater resources than me. There are people that have better skills than me. There are people that can talk better, sing better, play a musical instrument better. There are people that are wealthier than me. There are people that have a lot more time than me. I'm going to just allow them to give to God, and that will be amazing. I think I'll just sit here because my stuff really isn't going to do much anyway. Nowhere in Scripture does it say that's the posture we should take. In fact, there's two times specifically that God does something really incredible. One of the things is the temple tax, this idea that everyone is supposed to be contributing to the building and maintaining of the temple. And the temple tax was so small that literally anybody could participate, including kids. That's what's amazing. God isn't looking at just getting, let's just get a bunch of mega donors and that will save us. No, God says, like, everyone needs to participate. And then we got this older woman who, she's a widow. She doesn't have much money. And what does she do? She brings two mites and she puts them into a box. And God says, this woman gave more than all of those other people combined. Because God is not looking at the value. He's not looking at what you are giving. He is looking, are you giving? Are you giving of yourself? If there are people in your sphere of influence that don't know anything about Jesus, and your evangelism strategy is to just simply bring them to church and hopefully I'll say something intelligent enough that brings them to faith, there's nothing wrong with that, but here's a news flash. What if you told them about Jesus? What if you said, hey, I'm gonna give what I got. My testimony's not that great. My eloquence is not that high, but I'm going to give what I've got, and I'm going to see what's going to happen. When you see someone that is in need and you go, I don't have enough money to really help them, are you giving in such a way that says, God, this is all I've got, I'm going to give, and hopefully, Lord, help them and be with them? Are you encountering people who are struggling medically, right? And you're like, I don't have enough to help them, and let's be honest, my prayers are really not that effective, but, you know, Mark's got the hotline to God, and so I'm going to tell him, and it'll be like, boom, God's going to let, how about, you know what, be bold enough to actually pray for a miracle. Wouldn't that be crazy if all of you said, you know what, I all I can do is ask, God, I don't know what to do, like, heal him, heal her, save him, save her, provide for him, provide for, give what you have, and let's see what God does with it. Well, I don't know, should we see what God's got? Because I know here, what is one of the biggest complaints that we have as people when we give in some way, whether it's our time or whether it is our money or whether it is our skilled resources, one of the things that all of us are worried about is, are we going to have anything? Are we going to be left with anything? Or am I going to give and I'm just going to be completely depleted and then I'm going to be useless to everyone else? That doesn't seem to be how God operates. Again, it's one of my favorite stories. You've probably heard it before, but it is one of my favorite stories. We had a gentleman in our church who was homeless. His name was Richard, and he had suffered a catastrophic stroke. And he was having problems, and we were like, we've got to help him. And so I decided, you know what? Let's just take an offering. Let's, like, we're going to help them. We're going to raise some money. We're going to give it to them. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what, maybe we'll get like $250 or something, but that'll be, we'll get them something. Like, we're going to help out. And I'd already said I was going to go visit him. We were going to try and set him up with the VA hospital. We were getting all these things. So I asked the church. Now, this was tough because this was also a time Searchlight wasn't really doing very well financially. And so I'm like, I'm going to ask, and Richard's going to get all the money. And there's not going to be anything left for the church. And it's going to be a really bad week. So I offered it up. See, again, you think I have just this amazing faith. I don't. I'm a terrible, terrible human being. I'm growing in my faith, and I'm really thankful for that. And this is one of those stories that has helped me. We asked, counted up afterwards. I said, how much did we get for Richard? I forgot who counted. It might have been Bob and Melissa. It might have been, I don't remember who counted. But they came to me and they said, we just raised $5,000. Now again, there was like 60 people. Like, it wasn't a big group of people. And I was like, wait, $5,000? They're like, yeah, $5,000. And I start calculating in my head, because I'm one of those calculators. I'm like, we haven't received $5,000 in offerings in a week, ever. So I start to despair, because I'm horrible. And I'm like, oh, great. So we just raised all this money for him. And so then I said, okay, well, what did we get in offerings? They said, oh, we got 7,000. We had 5,000 and then 2,000, so we have 7,000. No, we 5,000 for Richard and 7,000 for the church. So again, when you talk about, does God know us, love us, and care for us? Watch through the miracle about what happens. Okay, so 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? Jesus said, have the people sit down. There's plenty of grass in the place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. So again, was there more people there? We often think there had to be. I don't know, even just 5,000 men would still be a lot of people. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks. Oh, there we go. Man, that's the first key. If you're giving to God, give thanks. Let it be joyful. And God talks about that a lot. When you give, like if you are volunteering at distribution of food over Christmas time, and you look like the Scrooge, it might not be a good thing for you to do. Now, again, trust me, there have been times that I have served and I've been very Grinchy or Scroogey, and then God quickly changes me and my heart grows 3 times that day and I finally give with joy because I see what God is doing, because God is helping and blessing and I get a chance to be blessed way more than all of these other people. So when you give, if you give of your time, if you give of your resources, if you are skilled in terms of talking with people, if you're skilled in being a musician, if you're skilled in just being relational, if you give that and you say, I'm just going to do this and I'm going to give this with joy, it is such a wonderful thing. Again, I'm always impressed. Searchlight, you're amazing. You're wonderful. When we went over to Cambridge Court and we sang some songs and I played the guitar and I'm a horrible guitar player and it was terrible, but we did and we laughed and we... The people were crying. The one lady just runs around and she hugs. She doesn't speak English, but she walked around and hugged all of us. It was amazing. We had such a great time. We gave thanks. God, thank you for these people and thank you for what we can do. Was it a lot? No. We didn't have much, but we took what we had and we gave thanks and then we give it. This is going to be important. We're about to celebrate it with communion. What does Jesus do at communion time? Yeah, on the night when he was betrayed, he took the bread and he gave thanks. He is about to die and he's giving thanks. He is about to be crucified on a cross and he's saying, thank you, Lord. So it doesn't have to mean that your circumstances are perfect. It doesn't have to mean that your circumstances are filled with such joy. You could be filled with pain and sorrow and still saying, God, I give you thanks. I give you thanks for what you've done. I give you thanks for everything that you've given to me. Give thanks. Give thanks for what he does. So he gives thanks, and he distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. Okay, now, if the majority of things, the majority of the people are men, are we ones who eat, and then if we're like, you can have as much as you want, do we stop after a bite or two and say, oh, thank you, no, that's good, I'm done, right? No, because men are horrible, and we're gluttonous, and we're like, wait, all you can eat? Oh my gosh, this is great buffet. I think I shall eat more. Are you hungry? No, but I'm still going to eat. So all these people are hungry, and they're distributing the food. And again, you could go to the other gospel writers, and especially with I wish I knew how the miracle worked. Like if you were given 1/6 of a piece of bread and 1/12 of a fish, no wait, 1/6 and 5/12 of a piece of bread, and you would like go to that hangry group over there and give it to them. I'd be like, you go do that. Well, people gonna kill me. But somehow, like, and I think, again, I don't think, like, there's the plate, and all of a sudden, mounds of food popped up. Because if that was the case, I'd be like, yes, bread for you. There you go. Catch this fish. This is wonderful. It would be, I think you're walking up to the first guy going, would you like some? And, yes, I'm super hungry. Here you go. Okay. Well, that's cool. All right. Do you want some? Here you go. Oh, how did that happen? And soon you're passing out all this food and you come back to the first guy because the first guy's like, I'm hungry still. And so they keep on feeding. This is incredible. I love the concept of what God does, that he wants you to eat and he wants you to eat as much as you can. He's going to talk about it. We're going to get to the idea of what that means in terms of our spiritual lives. That's next week. But this is incredible that the disciples get to watch as God multiplies this food in an incredible way and everyone gets to eat until they are satisfied. This completely and utterly destroys any concept that this wasn't a miracle because everyone was just touched by the generosity of the kid. As I still hear this to this day. I saw it actually, I think it was on Facebook or something. The feeding of the 5,000 wasn't really a big miracle because what happened was the kid showed up with his 5 barley loaves and 2 fish and everyone was touched by the generosity of this little kid that they're like, oh man, that's right. I did have a burrito in here. Yeah, let's share this too. And then there's Robert. He's like, I did have this double-double. I was saving it for later, but you know what? I'm so moved at the No, because if you had food, would you have eaten it? If you had a double-double, you would have eaten it already, right? It's already gone. They don't have food, and then you get to eat until you can't eat anymore. And again, if you were the disciples, here's what I'm thinking. I'm doing a lot of work here, Jesus. I'm running around. Like, I've never seen the logistics of feeding 5,000 people. But it's going to take a little bit of time, right, to get the food distributed, and then someone else is hungry, and they're like, can I have a little bit more? Like, sure, yeah, let me, here you go. And so you give it, and if you're a disciple, what are you thinking? And I don't believe, I could be wrong, I know if I were a disciple, I'd be sneaking some food while I was distributing, but it doesn't seem to say that. So all of these people are distributing, and then verse 12, when they had enough to eat, he said to the disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. Because again, this is what we're worried about. It's hard to give because is there going to be anything left for me? And when they gathered, so they gathered them and they filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. 12 baskets. Wait. 12 baskets, which means who else got a basket? Our wonderful, horrible stealer Judas, right? Because I think that if they were, you know, they said, can we provide enough? And 8 months' wages, couldn't even feed them. I wonder if like someone looked at Judas and was like, I don't know if you know this, Judas was the keeper of the money, right? So he was the accountant. So I wonder if someone looked at him and said, well, do we have enough? And Judas always stole from Jesus. Like, he's like, nope, don't have 8 months' wages in here. Sorry, Jesus, ain't gonna work. 12 baskets left over, and even Judas gets food to eat. This is incredible. The theological import of Jesus providing us bread from heaven, bread that satisfies so that we don't ever go hungry again, much like living water, so that we will never thirst again. That's next week. What does God want us to learn today? Bring what you have. You are not useless. Stop thinking that way. I know it's easy to pop into that, to go, this is too big of a job. Yeah, it is too big of a job. Bring what you have and let God do the rest. And watch what happens. And again, this next miracle, verse 14. Yeah, this is funny. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who has come into the world. You can read about that. The prophet of Deuteronomy 18 is supposed to come to the world. That's the Messiah. So they're like, maybe this is the guy. Verse 15, Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. How do you make Jesus king by force? Like that I've always been wondering. Like, do you like put a sword to him and be like, you will be king? Like, no, I don't want to be king. Yes, you will be king. We're going to make you king. He knows that these people are still a little bit new in their faith, a little bit new in what the Messiah was supposed to do. And he's like, yeah, I'm not here to just feed you. I'm here to save you. I'm not here to rule a kingdom that will be on this earth. I'm going to rule another kingdom that rules over everything. And so Jesus withdraws. And now the second miracle, again, how important it is. It's very strange how John records this miracle differently than what the others do. So if you ever want to hear some of the stuff with the walking on water story, it's incredible. But John gives a much more abbreviated version. And if you want to read Matthew 14, Mark 6, they have the other things. So when evening came, his disciples went down to the lake where they got into a boat and set across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed 3 or 3.5 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on water, and they were terrified. So again, read one of the other passages, because it gives this fuller, longer story that's there. What is John trying to point out? John is trying to point out once again, they're helpless. They're useless. They've put the boat halfway into the Sea of Galilee. They're literally smack dab in the middle. And they can't get out. They don't have the resources. And then Jesus starts walking on the water, right? They were terrified, right? Because how many of you, if you saw Jesus walking on water, would be terrified? You would be, don't be liar. You're in church. You'd be terrified. Like, oh, I haven't said, wow, he multiplied wine, and now he's done loaves and fishes. He can't walk on water, can he? Oh, yeah, he can. And I love it because, but he said to them, it is I, don't be afraid. And thankfully, they had like voice recognition, like we think that's Jesus. Again, read the other accounts. It's more hilarious because we also don't even get Peter in this one, right? Because don't you remember Peter goes and walks up? John doesn't even record that. He goes right in the thing because John records another miracle that we never talk about when we do the walking on water story. You know what that miracle is? Jesus drives speedboats. Check out what happens. This is the craziest thing. So, verse 21, then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. Wait, what? How did, wait, the boat immediately, again, John, like, give me some more details. Did it just, like, materialize? Did they just, like, go faster? Did time stand still? I have no idea. There, Jesus hops in the boat, and the next thing you know, you're on the shore. Right? Because again, you don't have the resources. You are unable to do this. You can't row hard enough. You can't row fast enough. You are in the storm and it's not going to work. And when you have Jesus with you and you give what you have to Jesus, he makes things happen, like getting you to the shore safely on the other side. And it is very interesting because this sets up the next week. So I want to read it. I won't talk about it. Verse 23, the next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but they had gone away alone. Then some boats from Tiberias landed near the place where the people had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into the boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. What they're saying is these people were so excited about what Jesus was doing and able to do that they're willing to follow him wherever he went. Man, we're not willing to follow Jesus even across the street half the times. Jesus is doing stuff, and we would like to tell Jesus, here's what we would like you to do. Jesus is off doing other things. Here's a news flash. Why don't you just do what Jesus is doing? Just go where Jesus is at and see what Jesus does in all of that. And you'll be amazed at what ministry can take place. These people saw the miracle. They wanted to make Jesus king by force, but they were still willing to go after him. And then Jesus gets a chance to talk to them. And that sermon will happen next week.